Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Brighton Rock Podcast. The beautiful club within the beautiful game. That's what we're here to talk about, as always. With me and with Peter, we have Andy Knott, who is in the background. He's cooking, but he is dipping in and out when he can. Hello, Andy.
I'm here. Hello.
Excellent. And we have a returning Richard of the Holberton variety as well. How are you doing, Richard?
I'm very well. Very well, Russ. I've thawed out since Saturday, thankfully.
Yeah, marvellous. Marvellous. And did any of you boo at the weekend? I'm sure all of you did, didn't you? Terrible.
I did, but not at the game. Just randomly at people walking down the street, you know.
only at the highlights of Strictly, not in a football context.
Was that Craig Revel Horwood's scathing criticisms? You got to boo that, haven't you?
Yeah, he just brings out the worst in me. But other than
what would he have made of Albion's finishing?
I shudder to think what he would have made of that.
But he wouldn't be saying fabulous, that's for sure.
No, he wouldn't.
Anyway, yes, and indeed that is the case, and that is why we have failed to win yet again, another goalless draw in a game in which we've, well, pretty much dominated the overall general play. We did, however, preserve our clean sheet record against Leeds, which now stretches to 6 games in a row at the Amex, which is quite satisfying. Not that we really had to do much to stop them. They didn't really pose much of a threat when all said and done. The game, yeah, 0-0 in the end. Lineups we had, well, the BBC described it as a back four with Veltman, Webster, Duncan, Cucurella. I'm not quite so sure about that. It's kind of flexible between that and a back five, you could say. Lamptey did go forward a lot, especially first half, Lamptey being the right side. The rest of the middle was Grosch, Bissouma and Modder for this one, with Trossard playing further forward and Morpay up top. A returning Schithauser back with us, but not really up to many antics and not up to many scoring moments either, unfortunately. His record now reads 22 goals from 82 games for us. I think it's a little bit less than I'd like it to be, I have to say, particularly after the weekends. It's not bad, but it's just, I think after a good start, things have been disappointing. But he's not been in the team for a few games. He's come back, and I guess it looked like a confident shot, Morpay, I would say. He missed, well, 2 or 3 chances, the first of which, I think it was his first, was the one where he prodded over the bar, which I thought was dreadful. He had one shot blocked, to be fair, couldn't do much about that. But in general, he could have done so much more. We could have done so much more. Modder as well, guilty with some off-target shooting. He had a few shots. None of them hit the target, I don't think. And that's about the measure of the game. So we lined up against a Leeds side, which had Calvin Phillips starting in it, but not finishing. He came off at a very early point in the game, namely half-time, I think, thereabouts. They had a lovely guy called Junior Firpo at left-back, who had a wonderfully easy and relaxing afternoon in the company of the Pocket Rocket, Mighty Mouse himself, Tariq Glanty. Go on, Andy.
He did have a comfortable afternoon in the second half.
Yes, he did, yeah. Well, I mean, he got booked in, I think it was the third minute, which set the tone. Yeah, I mean, he got the second half off, of course. I think they were worried he might get either just turned over once too often, damaging effect, or possibly sent off, which, to be honest with you, we'll come to it, no doubt, amongst other things, he could very well have done anyway.
What I'm saying, in fairness to Firpo, is after the first 20 minutes, he did get better and they did double up on Lamptey. So,
yeah,
you know, he didn't give away quite so many. You know, in the first 20 minutes, Lamptey was all over him. And, yeah, he was quite lucky. There was one incident, I think he pulled Lamptey back on his area and the referee didn't even give a free kick. And there was a couple of others, one where he literally held on to him and wouldn't let him go and was lucky not to get more than just a free kick, I think. But I think after the first 20 minutes, he actually did improve. But, yeah, I can understand why even then they took him off at half-time.
Yeah. The game itself, I mean, it was all about the first half, really. What we weren't able to achieve in that first half, for me anyway. Fourth minute, Lamptey burst through, cuts it in for Modder. Modder shoots over the bar. That was a really good chance, to be honest. Should have got that on target. Just a minute later, we have Firpo's yellow for fouling Lamptey. Eighth minute, there's a counter leading to Morpay's shocker, which we've just described. Again, it was Lamptey down the right side. I think this time prodded on by, I think it was Grosch, wasn't it, that nudged
it? I thought it was Modder.
Was it Modder?
I thought at the time, but...
Yeah.
It was anyway.
It was nudged on to reasonable effect. It wasn't an off-putting touch, shall we say. And and unfortunately, Neil decided to just prod that over the bar. It's one of those ones you had to get a deft touch on, really. You couldn't just put a full contact on. You had to kind of almost take something off of it.
He decided to prod it over the bar. I mean, that makes it sound like he did it on purpose.
Yes, it really was frustrating because that's one of those ones you feel a lot of people would have put away and we just weren't able to do so. 20th minute, Trossard's perfect shot turned onto the post. We'll probably talk about that a little bit more in a moment or two. Firpo multiply hugging Tariq in the 21st minute, what could have been a second yellow. I mean, it's holding onto him for so long. And the 27th minute, Lamptey again owning Firpo near the far post, crosses to Morpay. His shot's blocked off, which was, to be fair, was just good defending, nothing wrong with that. But it then came later in the move to Bissouma, who glided it wide. So that was the first half an hour described in a nutshell. I mean, guys, what did you make of that? Andy and Richard, I mean, let's bring you in on that. Who wants to go first?
I think you summed it up pretty well there, Russ. I mean, the first 20 minutes, 30 minutes, we were all over them. And Lamptey against their left back was a mismatch that we went to a lot. Webster was instrumental in quite a few of those attacks that you mentioned, bringing the ball out and feeding Lamptey. Certainly one of them, he made a really nice pass inside Firpo and Lamptey latched onto it. So,
yeah,
I mean, we were just dominant in that opening period. And as you say, there were, I don't know, three, four very presentable chances, at least one of which was more than presentable and really, really should have gone in. And I think, you know, it wasn't quite that lopsided in the second half. But yeah, the frustration is a lot of really good build-up football. We were comfortably better than them in pretty well every facet of the game, but couldn't score. Where have we heard that before? And it is frustrating. And it would have just changed the complexion of the game, I think, if one of those chances had gone in, or two of them had gone in, you know, and you're at least a goal up in the first 15 minutes. That settles the team, gives everybody a bit of confidence, settles the crowd as well. But yeah, wasn't to be. So yeah, frustrated.
Yeah, we were really profligate in front of goal, weren't we, Andy? With the exception of that aforementioned shot from Trossard, that was a brilliant save, actually, from Melier, as it turned out. I thought he just kicked it straight onto the post, but it turns out there was a telling, if subtle, touch on that, which made the difference. And seeing an angle from behind the goal, that was certainly going in, possibly directly or slightly off the post. That was, to be fair, a brilliant shot. Really unlucky that we couldn't score with that. But apart from that, we didn't take our chances, did we?
Yeah, I mean, Craig Fulton missed that save as well. And yeah, Trossard's been great this season. I, thought he was extraordinary in the first half.
Absolutely.
Also did that run in the second half, I think it was. That was where he virtually went the whole pitch. I mean, the word that you've used an awful lot is frustrating, and that's what it is. It's a problem that we're familiar with. Broadly, I don't really view this as a great problem. We're familiar with it. How are we going to sort it out? Well, what I want to see more of, beyond, you know, putting in open goals, is that our midfielders start scoring goals as well. I did listen to a little bit of your Villa conversation between Pete and Russ. I'm broadly with Russ on there. I didn't think we were poor against Villa. I certainly would agree with the kind of unadventurous, and I didn't think we were very incisive. But what we do probably need is a different option in terms of a striker. Not necessarily, you know, blow the bank type striker, but for games like the Villa game, I think we need options. We haven't got on to the second half yet, have we? Should I go on to the second half or not?
Yeah, feel free. I think we've covered just all the main points. Yeah.
Just because I'm quibbling with Pete, I didn't think Firpo did all right after 20 minutes, because that ball inside from Webster took place towards the end of the first half. And he had the opportunity, Webster had the opportunity to do it a little bit earlier as well, and he missed it. And you know that I'm a big fan of Webster. I thought his radar was well off for an awful lot of the game, actually. But his drive...
He almost cost us the second half, didn't he? Yeah. With that one across goal that and Sanchez between them saved us.
Yeah, I mean, his driving runs were great. We're going to come up... was it second half? Yeah, I mean, LaCardia. I mean, Sami Entento, that's really, really exciting. And that puts what we will talk about, which is the burn at the end of the game, that makes me even more livid that those so-called fans decided to do that. But Sarmiento looked really exciting, and Sarmiento is, to me, what kind of encapsulates what our squad's all about at the moment. And I know we're going to speak about the striking options.
Yeah, I think Sarmiento is also maybe an answer in a sense to what you were saying is the issue up front, which is that we need different options, different presences, different threats that we could pose to the opposition.
I think we need a 5-year younger Murray. That's the
ideally
younger Murray. Ideally,
yeah. I mean, it's different kinds of things. Yeah, but throwing it, we were saying after Villa, and we said before the Leeds game as well, that we wanted to see Sarmiento thrown in. If we haven't got any other options, then do that. And he did that, but also did the annoying thing beforehand. He brought Lucardia on a few minutes earlier than that. I think just go straight with Sarmiento earlier on and see if he can have an impact over the extra several minutes or whatever it was.
Frankly, I'd rather have brought Steele on than Lucardia.
In that position, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't want to bang on about it too much, but that decision baffled me. Whatever way you look at it, I can't really see a defensible logic to it. LaCardia was on a good 10 minutes before Sarmiento was on, which, again, put those two things together, that doesn't make sense to me either. You know, I'd seen Sarmiento at Leicester a few weeks back, and he looks a really, really exciting prospect. He's quick. He can control the ball under pressure. Yeah. He can beat people. He's got good vision. He's got great feet. You know, why not bring him on? If you're going to bring more play off because it's not his day or he's knackered or both, I can't really see why bringing LaCardia on at 70 minutes is remotely a solution to any of that.
Yeah, well, clearly...
I actually would have left Mopay on because tapping in a two-yard shot would have been a huge boost to his confidence somehow got one like that. I do think Potter's got to take a little bit of blame for Mopay because he looked in good form before he dropped him and he's come back from being dropped and looks really low in confidence, especially in front of goal. So whatever's happened, something's dropped his confidence, either being dropped or whether something's happened behind the scenes, but it's not helped him. And he looked like a player that he was for much of last season on Saturday rather than the player he was at the start of the season.
I think you're reading too much into it kind of retrospectively in terms of Potter affecting Mopay's confidence. I mean, it's quite obvious that Mopay is a confidence player. So I agree with that. But when it comes down to it, I think there are about 6 or 7 players that are about automatic picks. So that would be Sanchez, Lamptey, Dunk, Webster, Cucurella, Bissouma, Trossard. And then beyond that, we're kind of rotating, I would say. I'm not quite sure why Mopay was left out for this prolonged period, but I don't think you can say that the reason why he missed that open goal was because Potter dropped him.
I'm not definitively saying that he looked low on confidence. That's where
I really do agree with you is I wouldn't have taken him off at that point because I thought he was actually playing pretty well at that time.
Yeah, it was just the shooting bit. And I do find it's interesting you're saying about the 7, and I get what you're saying, but I think it's almost a kind of suggest that Potter doesn't have a great deal of faith in Mopay that he's not in that list because he should be as the only fit striker we really have at the moment.
Indeed. I mean, it's interesting Sarmiento's come in because, I mean, there was talk about whether Ferguson might be thrown into the equation, and clearly he was out of the squads for the 23. And everyone thought, it was 23's game, and everyone thought maybe, it could be him on the bench. Actually, it wasn't the case. Connolly wasn't on the bench. So clearly, he's either injured or got an attitude problem or he's got confidence issues or whatever.
He's been back, hasn't he? Fit for the last 2 games beforehand. So I don't know what's happened.
Yeah, we can only assume that he's out of favour or injured. Or he's ill or whatever.
If he's below LaCardia, bloody hell.
Yeah, I mean, if that is what it is, I mean, that doesn't bode well, does it? And right. I think just chuck in Sarmiento and maybe chuck in Ferguson as well. It's interesting that Sarmiento's risen into that position because he's clearly offering something more than just the goals in terms of what he's been doing in pressing. But he's a dynamic presence. He didn't have much time.
Which you can't say about LaCardia.
No, exactly. I mean, we need someone, don't we, who provides an offensive presence and not someone who is an offensive presence. And that's what he is to me. I think
you've been lining that up all night, have you?
I have actually been thinking about that. I thought I've got to throw that in at some point. But it's true, isn't it? I mean, he's aggravating people. Nobody's inspired with confidence when he comes on the pitch. And OK, he did at least look like he was trying in this game. He did make some movements where other times he's just lolled around. That's about as good as you can say for him, really. I mean, he had one tame shot to me quite near the end where he was on the turn.
20-minute cameo in the Premier League since we've been up than the Cardiff.
Probably.
Also at Huddersfield, that first game was dreadful, wasn't he? And he's hauled off at half-time on his debut at right midfield. But there's not many, I don't think.
He hasn't played. He hasn't played in the Premiership since August 2019, I think I read. So that's nearly 2.5 years ago. And, you know, I'm generally a big fan of Potter's, as you know, but I do think that, you know, I think we're entitled to question that decision. Because, you know, you had McAllister on the bench, you had Mwepu on the bench, you could stick Trossard in a centre-forward position and reconfigure the midfield. There's all sorts of different permutations So any, yeah, as you said, anything. Jason Steele, yeah, doesn't matter. Anything would have been preferable.
I just can't
fathom the thinking.
I wanted him to bring on the free score and Adam Lallana.
Yes, another clinical finisher.
Has actually got more goals for Brighton than Lallana has, actually.
The goals he has scored have been good finishes. It's just, you know, he's, in terms of his presence on the pitch, in terms of his effort, his attitude, his getting into the squad achievements are just not there in the first place. So it doesn't,
over 2.5 years ago, so
exactly,
probably exactly, not exactly improved since then, seeing as he didn't do great in America. Yeah.
He's a spent force, isn't he? I can only assume that there may be the option, of course, that of why Potter did that may not have been necessarily for purist reasons. He may have been trying to make a point. It's been suggested by a number of people.
I can't see that in a winnable game. Being that sort of person. I mean, surely everyone can see we need a striker without bringing Lacazette on. You don't need to bring on Lacazette to show that.
And I'm sure the owners know that he knows, and he knows that the owners know. So it's not as if...
Even if that were the reason, that means he's prepared to jeopardise or sabotage the chances of winning a game and basically throw away two points to make a point that people already know.
Now, Gus Poyet, I could see doing that, for example. I can imagine you doing that to make a point. But Potter, no, I can't believe he'd do that.
No, I don't think he would.
It is the most logical explanation because there isn't any other, to be honest.
I mean, if anyone's got any other comments on the rest of the second half, by all means, throw them in. I was just going to say something about the booing at the end, but if anything to do with the match, please go in with that.
The only thing I was going to say was that in the end we had 20 shots to 11 in total, but we tested them far less, their keeper far less than they tested
four on target?
Yeah. And therefore, you know, obviously ours was one was like on the post, pushed onto the post from Trossard, and that was really good. Mm. But the other three were all straight at the keeper, whereas Sanchez made two really good saves second half. Mm. So the frustration thing is we could easily have lost it as well.
I think those stats you've quoted are the same as Norwich's game in their goalless draw, which pipped us to last on match of the day, interestingly. But anyway, Andy, yeah.
I'm going to quibble with that again. I thought he did a few poor things, but also Solly was pretty effective when he came on. Mm. They weren't straight at the keeper. I think both of his efforts were pretty good saves, actually, from their keeper. I mean, one was part blocked.
The deflected one. Yeah, that's true. The other one hit the post, I think, rather than on target.
No, the goalkeeper put it onto the post, I think.
Yeah, I think he got
to the post and bounced out to him.
It was a bit unclear, but it looked like he might have got a slight touch.
I don't think they counted that in the stats because we only had four shots on target. And I think two or three of them at least were on straight at the keeper.
Yeah, I think it would have been probably seen as having gone straight on the post in terms of the stats people. But I mean, you know, we mentioned Norwich. Obviously, famously, Stockdale scored two goals there in a similar sort of scenario. You know, your shot comes back off the woodwork, so to speak, and then, you know, it bounces in. Anything could have happened. It's just one of those days. The earlier shot, yeah, you're right. It was blocked quite early into the shot, deflected up, which actually did present a really difficult situation for the goalkeeper. So that was a good save. But where it was originally going to go, I think, was further towards the near post, similar to where that shot that did hit the post went. And I think that, who knows what that would have been like. That might have been a brilliant shot that was going straight in. But yeah, I thought Solly did okay. I thought there was a number of decent individual performances as well as the general team play. I agree that Trossard had a brilliant game, I thought. Lamptey obviously shone. He's really back to his best. Bissouma looked like he was back to his best. I think most of the back line was solid, apart from what we said about Webster's faux pas. Cucurella had another great game in both terms, forwards and backwards. I mean, it's a couple of really good interceptions, which prevented possibly dangerous attacks just by reading it very early. And one occasion he
blocked it as well.
And Veltman was. I thought he was flawless. Yeah, I think an unsung hero in this game, actually.
Yeah, and to go back to one of your earlier comments, Russ. It was kind of hard. It was hard to work out whether it was really a back five or a back four because you look at how high up the pitch Lamptey was in the first half. Anyway, I mean, he was way over the halfway line
pretty much
most of the time, and Veltman was a conventional right back. So that was that was a four. And to your point about the second half, you know, they made some adjustments at half time. They took their left back off. They took Calvin Phillips off. And they made another sub. I think they'd made all three of their subs not far into the second half. So they changed things around a bit. And it kind of got a little bit shapeless. And we became a bit less of a threat. I mean, Lamptey got subbed off for whatever, 70 minutes or thereabouts, and was becoming a bit less effective for a few minutes before that because he was clearly tired. So, but as you said, there were still, I don't know, three, four, five presentable chances in the second half. I mean, Modder had a couple of decent chances. He had one where he intercepted a back pass and kind of scuffed it slightly across goal, which maybe he could have made more of. And he had one... where Grosch cut it back to him and it hit it over the bar, and the two saves from Mark. So, you know, we were still creating chances, even though we didn't look quite as dominant throughout the second half as we did in the first.
That's true. And actually, speaking of scuffed, I think the other chance that Morpay had was in the first half. He had a shot which he couldn't quite connect with properly. I'm not so sure how much there was any blame in that one. I think the timing of it just wasn't quite right. He had a player bearing down on him as well. I'm not sure.
Yeah, but, the disappointing thing about those three early chances is that we didn't hit target with any of them.
Yeah. I mean, that's the problem.
But if it saves it, fine. Yeah. But, you know, they were all off target.
That's what I was kind of getting at, that we had a lot more shots but didn't, you know, I think Sanchez made two of the best three saves of the game, probably. Maybe certainly two of the best four.
Yeah.
Andy?
In terms of the formation, I think we played with the back four, really. I mean, I know it was difficult to work out. I'd probably say it was a kind of 4-3-3, but Moda was floating around, playing quite advanced. You know, Trossard started off on the left. Lamptey played extremely high up the pitch.
He did.
Yeah. I think he could adapt to a five if needed at times, didn't it? I mean, I thought Trossard had about his best game for us, but I mean, I agree with everyone else. I think I would have said, because Lamptey, I think, faded a bit second half, I would have put Trossard as man of the match, followed by Veltman, to be honest, and then Lamptey, which is a bit controversial.
Trossard was exceptional. Yeah, he was exceptional, especially in the first half.
I think Carrillo was my man of the match, but I think Trossard has been comfortably our best player this season.
Yeah.
It's been exceptional.
And there were two brilliant runs. There was the one Andy was talking about, which I thought was first half, but either way, when he went backwards and then turned and then went pretty much the length of the pitch. And there was also one where he went across the area and beat two or three players and eventually fed, I think, Cucurella. His skill level. I mean, there's talk of linking him with Barcelona today. I think that might be a stretch, but... You know, you can understand why teams are going to get linked with it, especially if you've only got a year left in this contract after this year. You know, we need to sort that out soon if we're going to get the money we should get for him or keep him.
Well, we've got quite a few players whose contracts are up in 2023, isn't it?
Yeah. Not 2023. I think it's only Grosch the first team.
Actually, Lacardi's is up in 2022.
Yeah, it's only Grosch and Lacardi, I think, this summer for them, for the first team, I think. And then,
it's a lot next summer. And Welbeck.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, Peck. And then there's a lot, as you say. I think there's about 10 or something, aren't there? Yeah. Like McAllister and Modder. No, certainly McAllister and a couple of others as well who were quite regular.
Maypay, Trossard.
Yeah, we need to get that sorted soon.
Yeah, indeed. One thing, I mean, people have said it's a little bit like last season with the way we're, you know, our XG or the way we're not getting wins and not putting games to bed, that sort of thing. One thing, of course, that's been overlooked in all of that related to last year is hitting the woodwork. We hit it three times in this game. We're shaping ourselves up ready for the Man U match, aren't we, in a few weeks, obviously, so we can replicate that. That was pretty frustrating.
To be fair, the Modder one wasn't really frustrating because it hit the outside of the post and was never going to go in.
Yeah, to be fair, that was...
You can, it barely counts, in my view, as hitting the woodwork. Obviously, it does in the stats, but the other two obviously...
It doesn't have any other options there, does it? There's no one there. It's kind of unlikely to be able to hold it up and get the ball to someone afterwards, so you might as well have a pop.
It's almost physically, you have to swerve it to get it in from there, probably.
Yeah.
You know, the post is literally in the way of the goal from where he's shot from.
And, I mean, that once in a million, you might get some sort of extraordinarily deadly accurate shot there where it could go past one post off the other. That's true. He should have just looped it into the air, shouldn't he? See what happens. But we've got to talk about the incident. I know it's been disproportionately overblown, as we said off air just now, but the booing, of course, of the game. I mean, first of all, Graham Potter's quote after the game was to say,
I am a little bit perplexed to the reaction in the crowd at the end, because the performance was fantastic against a team that like to dominate possession, like to outrun you. They didn't do that today. They are entitled to their opinions, he said of the fans, but I disagree with them completely. We are sitting eighth in the Premier League, but maybe I need a history lesson on this football club. So quite spiky words from him, very uncharacteristic of him. Just before we go on to discuss that, I will also add in that a friend of the show, Alan, said that he sits in the West Lower, somewhere behind the dugouts, and somewhere in front of him, nearer to the dugouts, was somebody shouting a load of idiotic, to use his word, I think it was, kind of comments and criticisms in Potter's direction, which Potter heard and looked around on more than one occasion. So I would imagine actually that specific little incident there would have informed part of the reason for his reaction specifically, notwithstanding the fact there was some booing from what may have been 100-200 people, maybe. It's difficult to know exactly. It was minimal numbers, but it was quite tangible. It certainly irritated me where I was, and no one was booing near me. You can understand how, firstly, the booing, it's not really deserved from that performance. It was all you've got is a lack of finishing. We played well. We dominated the game. We played well. We're adventurous. We were fast moving with our attacks. And we did create chances, which has been the problem with certain other games, such as Arsenal and Villa. And yet it was just the finishing, which comes down to individuals in individual moments. And that team didn't deserve to get booed. I know that's maybe not what people were booing. They might be frustrated either just with the finishing or with the policy of not getting a, not the policy, but the failure to get a striker in. It might be those reasons. But the reality is that Potter and the players can justifiably feel that that could be aimed at them, because the frustrations are definitely there. We've not won the game. Maybe that's what they think's happened. Peter.
Yeah, I think I don't think it was aimed particularly at Potter and the players. I think the frustration, I didn't boo. I very rarely have ever booed any player at Albion, and that was mainly because they didn't put any effort in at times. I've never really booed off the team off after a match, because I don't think it doesn't do any good, even if they're terrible. It's only if players don't give it, put any effort in, that I'd ever boo. And if they can't be bothered to put the effort in, then why should I support them? But frankly, I do think that there is a, I'm not saying that they're right to boo, but I can understand the frustration. This isn't a one-off. And sometimes Potter does speak like this is a one-off. There was some comment similar on someone put on one of the WhatsApp groups the other day, which said something like, these things happen about us not taking our chances. Well, they seem to happen to us a lot. And that is, I think, where the frustration lies. We've not signed the striker we need. We can all see, everyone knows we needed a striker in the summer. We can't rely on Welbeck being fit. We can't rely on Connolly or Lacazette to get goals. So we're basically relying on Mope, who it can be, at the best, inconsistent to get goals.
Yeah. Well, Richard,
so why can't the club see that we need a striker, and why can't they, and I mean, even we've got a bloody striker who set up two goals against Bayern Munich playing in Germany, who we've decided it's best to loan out rather than, you can't tell me that Zakiri would have been a worse option than Lacazette off the bench the other day.
No. Well, that is true. There's no argument with that last point, that's for sure. I'm sure the club are very well aware of the need for the striker. It's about the balance of whether they're going to be willing to take second best, in terms of seriously second best, not just slightly second best options, just to fill the space. I mean, there's an argument to say we need some sort of number in there, especially if we're going to loan out Zakiri, but there we go. But Richard, I know you've got to go in a minute, so if I can just throw it to you, what did you make of the booing, and what do you think of the state of affairs?
Well, I share some of those views. I mean, I think it annoyed me a bit at the time as well, and that's despite the fact that, you know, my focus was on getting out of there and getting warm, so I kind of hardly noticed, but of course you pick it up. And it was very short lived, and it seemed to involve a pretty small number of people, which is not remotely to condone it. I think it was uncalled for and unhelpful and unacceptable. But it did involve a very small proportion of the crowd, of the remaining crowd. And actually quite a lot of people had left with
loads.
A surprising number of people had left at about 80 minutes. Yeah. So, it was a small,
including, can I just call it out, the North Stand were flooding out. There's so many people right around where one of the singing areas is under the box. More than half of them are gone with about 5 minutes of play left. I know it's cold.
It was very cold, but still. Anyway, that's a slightly different issue. there was nobody in the vicinity of where I was who I heard booing. Like Peter, I can't, you know, it sort of makes you think, well, you know, are there circumstances when it would be acceptable to boo your team? Yeah, possibly. I can't think that I've ever done it, although I probably got pretty close to it in one of the hippier matches. But, you know, yeah, it is unhelpful. I do, you know, the main thing I think is that, as we said at the beginning, we're kind of reinforcing this now by talking about it. I think it's been given far too much importance and far too much airtime already for what I hope is a, you know, fairly mild and one-off incident.
Well, we're going to do
it. Potter's comments, isn't it? Potter mentioning it made it an issue.
I'm honestly not sure that it's wise for him to have drawn that much attention to it
in
media comments, because that just kind of... I get why he was annoyed by it. Of course I do. But at the same time, you run the risk of kind of giving it more oxygen than it really deserves by talking about it a lot.
Yeah, and a history lesson is probably not very wise with Albion fans, because basically this club exists largely because of the work of fans. And and it's obviously not, most of it's not the same fans, I would imagine, who were there fighting for the club's future in the 90s. But, you know, it's still kind of like this club is mainly here because our fans fought for, to keep the club going.
You'd assume not. You'd assume it wasn't, you know, very long-standing fans. But who knows? We don't know who it was and we don't know why, right? You can guess at these things, but we don't know. I mean, I hope it doesn't signify, you know, a sort of sense of entitlement setting in among some bits of the fan base that, you know, we're entitled to beat Leeds because we're better than them. Well,
yeah.
And there is a difference between, you know, booing your football team and booing a comedian off stage, for example. I mean, you know, there's a difference between a supporter and a customer, I think, which can get lost when you're frustrated off
the term. That I wanted to use. I think they're entitled, and I would struggle to call them fans. I don't agree that they were necessarily booing the fact that we hadn't signed a striker. Who knows what they were doing? Only their explanation could tell us. But I think it was extremely poor on behalf of those people that decided to do it. I do think, it's unlike Potter to be to let his emotions show like this, and I think that's kind of quite telling. And I don't think it's really going to. We're saying that it was a bad move on his behalf, and it probably was, but that might just be a little bit of a sign of him saying, "Well, you're not very grateful for what we've achieved as a club." And the kind of direction that we're taking the club on. So I suppose that would be my point. Were you booing the players? Were you booing one player who we know, it seems fairly certain that his confidence suffers, and we may well have kind of caused a cycle or the continuation of that. Are you booing the manager? Are you booing the board? Are you booing Bloom for not getting his checkbook out? When he's got his checkbook out to the tune of hundreds of millions of pounds?
I'm not sure that you asked them, they'd know the exact reason they were booing in that. And if you break it down like that, I think they were just booing probably out of frustration that we didn't win a game that we absolutely should have won.
I suspect that's the main reason that happened.
It wasn't aimed at anyone in particular or anything like that. But the fact is that we've seen that game so many times over the last season and a half, two seasons. And it does get... I mean, I didn't boo, I wouldn't boo. I mean, they played really well for 85%, 90% of the pitch, but it isn't... You know, it is extremely frustrating to watch your team play so well and not win the game. That's the issue. I don't believe we should beat Leeds. I believe we should beat Leeds when we dominate so much and we have the chances to beat Leeds. That's what... And that's not entitlement. That's watching a game and realise... And if that's a one-off, that's fine. But when it happens so regularly, it does get a bit frustrating after a while.
Well, I'm going to have my rant now, because I mean, I agree with you, Andy. I don't think it was helpful at all. I was actually disgusted with it. I wouldn't say I turned into an animated comedy of parody of myself on the day. It was actually more as time went on, I got more and more irritated with what I'd heard, be it was minorities of numbers. But minorities or not, Graham, that got under Graham Potter's skin. That is one of a number of potential tipping points on the way to a situation that I would be fuming with, which is him being inclined to go versus not being inclined to go. If we're doing well and an approach comes in either, you know, next week or next year, and he's going to have that in his memory, especially an individual at close quarters barking crap at him, which apparently was happening. Just one person, even if there wasn't the booing, that one person can just feed into your psyche when it comes to making a decision. Because you think, I've just heard that guy, he won't be on his own. There must be others who are completely ungrateful for what he's done. His point about the history lesson, he's saying he needs to educate himself. Well, that is, he's saying, well, last time I checked, this is the best that this club's been doing, pretty much. And he's absolutely right. I think everything he said was spot on. I haven't got an issue with him saying it in terms of he was right. I do have a worry that it was maybe ill-advised to do it, but it's very hard not to. It's a lot harder not to than it is for those fans to boo frustration. I was frustrated beyond as much as anybody else, but I didn't boo. They were frustrated, which is what we think it is, and if that is what it is, and they did boo. And to me, that's potentially very harmful. And if that does make the difference between a really good manager staying with us or not, either in the short or long term, that is going to really piss me off, because those people don't know what the hell they're talking about when they're booing there. Yes, I agree with you, Peter. It's very frustrating. I agree with you. The run isn't great. But come on, we're playing the best football I've ever seen us play. We're in one of the best positions, if not the best position we've ever been in as a club. Certainly in the Premier League era, it's the case. We're not losing many games at all. How many games have we lost? Four games this season? Three, four?
Three, I think.
Everton, City and Villa. You know, we're not losing games. We had a very good start and people have said, oh, yeah, but now
I think that's
bad.
The problem. We won four out of five and people started to talk about Europe and all that, and then we haven't won since.
Yeah, it is. And for me, it's the opposite. It's not a problem, though, because we've got those points on the board. Now, all we're doing is with those eight games, it's a 0.75 points per game ratio, which if we carried that on for the rest of the season, we'd have 36.75 points, which would probably be enough to survive. And that's taking into account we had to face Liverpool and City in that sequence of two games. And we won't just carry on doing that. We will come back to do better unless this is damaging elements. If the booing carries on, if further reactions occur, then that could be a problem. That or a freak injury crisis are the only way we're going to be in a relegation fight this year, in my opinion.
It does seem, you look at the crowd, I mean, most people really appreciated that performance generally on Saturday. I thought we were 10 times better than we were at Villa, generally.
Yeah, 100%.
It was just 100%. Missing that one thing. And most people saw that, and most people, you know, appreciated that, you know, the players didn't miss on purpose. They were as frustrated, I imagine, after the game as we were. But I just think that we're letting 100 people get the coverage they want, when actually ignoring them would have been far better. And that's, you know, such a small percentage of the crowd doing something that, yeah, Potter would have been a lot better just not mentioning it, not saying a thing. Yeah. It would never have been mentioned. And, the media wouldn't have focused on it at all. And we wouldn't even be talking about it, probably, barely.
Because the media want grits, don't they? They want some juice. And that's juice. They're on maybe a not particularly exciting weekend in terms of other stuff going on. Ooh, Potter's had a go. That's fine. Let's focus on that. People want
to talk about how Brighton fans are entitled and that sort of thing. And it's bollocks. Yeah. Brighton fans, somebody, on the whole, are, I'd say, amongst the least entitled around because of where we've come from. The issue is a few hundred fans at most. And that's in a 25,000 stadium, 25,000 people probably, because there were some gaps Saturday and obviously away fans.
Yeah. Andy?
Yeah. Russell, you've articulated precisely what was underlying my anger. The only other thing that I'll say is I sit up in the West Upper at the south side, and we've historically been extremely poor in that area. There are people that kind of go there to have a bit of a grumble, really. There's very, very little singing going on there. But I do think the home crowd has been pretty poor over the last few games, actually.
I was going to make the same point, actually. Yeah.
There hasn't been that much noise. And Okay, the results haven't been great, but the last two home games against Newcastle and Leeds, you can't really fault the kind of... all right, you might fault the finishing, but you can't fault the performance. Unlike the Villa game, we did create those opportunities. We just didn't put them away, really. So my overriding impression is, okay, it's not a great run, and I'm not entirely convinced that we're going to get anything out of West Ham. Certainly not a win. So it's going to go on for longer. But as you said, Russell, we've got that cushion already from that start. And I agree with you, Peter, that there aren't too many games that we've won that we've necessarily deserved to have won. But I would say the likes of Newcastle, Leeds, even Liverpool, we probably deserved to win those games that we drew. Yeah. So I thought in the second half against City, I thought we were really, really good as well. So I'm kind of riffing on what you were saying in the last episode there. But I suppose my overriding view is there doesn't really seem to be too much of a pattern to identify this season. And I know, Peter, you're quite right to say that the Leeds game was reminiscent of an awful lot from last season. Our XG for this season, however, up until yesterday, was pretty much on a par with where we are at both ends.
Yeah. Just ironically, I think the games we've won, barring Watford, we've tended to lose on XG possibly, and then the rest have been like. And yeah, we've had other games that, as you say, that we've won. Arsenal, we must have won the XG because we dominated a lot of it. Yeah, Norwich, probably we were ahead on, just about ahead. Newcastle, Leeds. I thought, unlike Newcastle on Saturday, we carried on. Although we didn't have maybe such a good chance second half, we still carried on playing well all game. Whereas Newcastle, we lost our way when they equalised. Yes, we weren't so good last half hour. But yeah, I mean, I thought Saturday was one of our best performances of the season. It was just so frustrating that we then couldn't take our chances. Yeah, and Leeds, I thought, were dreadful, frankly, barring a couple of chances second half. But even then, there were ones that we gave them, like that one Webster misplaced pass, which gifted them the chance that Sanchez saved. It wasn't really them creating. And their passing was dreadful. I mean, a number of times they passed it straight out of play.
I mean, Dan James, a £30 million player.
He's all pace and nothing else, really, isn't he? He doesn't really have much else to offer. How he went to United is beyond me.
Yeah. Well, how United doubled the money in getting rid of him. But
that's true, yeah.
Yeah, Leeds really didn't look good at all, did they?
And in fairness, they're missing Bamford, but still, you know, Phillips was playing, although he was playing centre-back for part of it. Rafinha was back, Rodrigo was back. They've got a decent squad, but they should be looking... For a manager like Bielsa, who has his team so well drilled normally, I thought they looked really poor.
And also on the Bielsa matter, by the way, just today, as we record Monday, he has reiterated that it was a tactical change. It wasn't that he was injured or anything like that. So we can't say we've had some luck with him coming off at half time or something. Mm. Well, we shouldn't anyway, because we're better in the first half when he was playing. But, he came off for tactical reasons, apparently. And that's what Bielsa said today. So
you can argue the importance to us, Welbeck, is not too far off Bamford, if you look at how much we've done, how badly we've done since, in terms of wins, since Welbeck's dropped.
How Jekyll and Hyde is this season? You look at what Watford did. They thrashed someone one week, they get thrashed by Liverpool the next, then they beat Man United. You look at Leeds, they dominated the first half of the game against Spurs. Okay, Spurs aren't the best incarnation of Spurs we've ever seen, but they dominated the game from a position of being much lower down in the table and looked really good. And as the commentator said on our game, when I watched the game back live, the live recording, we've done to Leeds what Leeds did to Spurs, they said at one point.
Yeah. And that was without Rodrigo and Rafinha as well, who were both out last weekend, whereas they were back this weekend.
But on the point about the good start to the season, a lot of people put that in as almost like, it was a good start. We're lucky we got the good start. That's the only reason we're out of danger. It's too convenient to just brush that off, I think. Games, things happen in patches over indiscriminate periods. We have to package it into a season-by-season thing, fair enough. But those games were this season,
whether we're lucky or not to have got the results, we got those results early on, in the same way as we've been unlucky with some of the results in the bad run. The point is, it's all part of the same season, and you can't just conveniently say, as some people have, not you, Peter, but other people have said, oh, we're going to be in a relegation battle, I've heard this week. I thought, why? We're still doing a point per game virtually, even though we've had that good start beforehand. So we've got the buffer, which we happen to have had, but all of the games, every game, you can't pick and choose. They're all part of the same season. Yeah. And we are, when all said and done, 5 points above the point per game ratio. We're 7 points better off than we were at this stage last season, which I would say an argument to those that have said we're below the game by game comparison table, which does show us minus two. But we're 7 points better off than at this stage last season. Let's not forget that. That's all part of the same season, regardless of which order the good results came in.
Yeah, I mean, for me, if we end up this season with 45 to 50 points and finish between 10th and 14th, I think that's kind of where we're looking towards. That would be progress. You know, we know what the problem is. It's not just about signing a striker. It's about the midfield chipping in with goals. Most of our goals actually have come from forwards this season. So it's about midfielders and defenders chipping in with goals. I thought Moda has been looking pretty good in the last few games, and at least he got in those positions. And I know he blasted them over. I'm talking about those two. So I don't count the one where he hit the goal frame. But there was one passage of play where, well, in fact, I think it was for that shot, where he completely outpaced the Leeds defender.
You'll say on Match Today about his turn of pace on that, weren't they, commenting?
So
He's getting better all the time, as obviously he's getting better and better, and part of that will be the shooting.
And I think we have got unlucky in the sense that obviously Wepu got two goals in two games. Starts against Newcastle and then obviously goes off injured at half time and misses the Newcastle second half as they come back to draw, and then the you know, not great results against Villa and Leeds. So, you know, I mean, he's the one potentially who looked like he could suddenly become the goal scoring midfielder we needed, and then he gets an injury and misses the next 2.5 games or whatever. So we're unlucky in that sense. I know he obviously was on a bench Saturday, but he probably wasn't fully fit.
Yeah, true. Just a very quick break and then a very quick part two. But before we do that, anything else from the game from Saturday? I'm going with man of the match was Trossard, and I thought we played well. We just got to get that shooting sorted. Strikers, maybe in January, we'll see. But Chuck Sarmiento in as well. That's my thoughts on that. Peter?
Yeah, it was a head and shoulders above the Villa performance. So much better. It's just a different sort of frustrating. At Villa, it was frustrating because we didn't really offer much going forward. I didn't think we played that well. Obviously, you guys, I think, probably have been less harsh, should we say, than I have sometimes. But I still thought we were too ponderous and slow. Whereas Saturday, we were on it. We played really well, and it just lacked that. It was, you know, 90% of the play was brilliant and really good build up. Some really nice intricate passing, and then it was just frustrating at the other end. But overall, very good performance in a lot of ways. I mean, it is still quite amazing that you watch Albion playing like this in the Premier League and being eighth in the Premier League, having where we've come from, you know. So we shouldn't get too frustrated in a sense, because we are eighth in the top flight. Was it ninth now? United drew yesterday.
Yeah, that's right.
I would say that Cucurella was our best player, then Trossard, then Lamptey. And having said that, that's kind of unfair to Dunk, to Bissouma, to Beltman as well, who I all thought had pretty good games. Probably Moda, you could chuck in there as well. In terms of the Villa game, I mean, I do take your point about the kind of lack of incision, probably being a little bit cautious. But the one thing that I will say about Villa is they were really well organised. You could see that Gerrard had got in their heads, and they kind of defended deeply. And I think they would have been delighted if they got away with a 0-0 in that game.
Which, of course, Leeds didn't. Leeds, their normal open self. I mean, it was a very open game.
Yeah.
But their fans at the end, Leeds fans, did look like they were celebrating the point, I have to say. Given their perilous position, you'd think they'd want to still smash and grab a win. But I suppose a point is better than anything when you're down near the bottom. And Burnley have had their game postponed due to the weather. And you've gained a point, you're three clear, with, the, I think, the better goal difference as well, I guess. But, yeah, I mean, the one thing I'd say with Leeds is it's a good sign that we've got so many players we can talk about who could have been potential men of the match. Is whenever you've got that debate and can't ever settle on one, or it's a very close call either way, that's usually a good sign. It's usually related to a win, admittedly not on this occasion.
Surely Lecardier has to get a mention for that as well.
Yes, there were some good individual performances, is the way I would respond to that. Not from the some of the Leeds fans, though. I mean, generally, I didn't see anything particular going on in general, apart from when we got to the station and we got on the train. There were two things. First of all, they charged the railings down in order to get on the train they were going to get on anyway, which I thought was quite cool bit of improvisation there, and they seem to be celebrating that. And there was quite a lot of singing on the train and at the station as we got off. And as we started to go up the stairs, there was a bit of aggro, which I assumed was just a couple of people went too far. It was literally just two, three, four people throwing punches at each other. That was all. However, as I was moaning about that to my mate John, friend of the show, hello John, someone else came up to me on the side and said that was actually two sets of Leeds fans started fighting each other. He wasn't sure if they both thought the other people were Brighton fans or not, or whether they'd actually just fallen out and had a disagreement on some other matter. I don't know. Very bizarre behaviour.
There always seems to be something. Any fans could fight themselves, then Leeds surely are up there, aren't they?
So here we are then, part two of this exciting podcast in which we've been talking about the lovely latest draw, this time against Leeds, 0-0. One thing we said in the preview to that was that we were even on our historical head-to-head, an exact symmetry in play there. And next up, we're playing West Ham. We'll get on to the preview of that shortly. But just to let you know, actually, the head-to-head against West Ham is very similar to that with Leeds. We've won 18. We've lost 18 and we've drawn 19 games. So it's exactly even. However, our recent record is
better. If we win one and lose one this season, it'll be exactly even across all three.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, exactly. It's going to be an interesting game and we'll get on to that in a while. But before we do, Peter, other bits of football news from the weekend. We've got to mention Ralph Raniak has been confirmed now. The concept is he's coming in as an interim manager with Michael Carrick stepping from... well, he's going to be interim manager until the visas come through. And then he's going to become number two, I think, to Ralph Raniak as the main interim manager for the rest of this season. The concept is that Raniak will then step upstairs and take on a consultancy role for 2 years, which presumably will allow him to maybe assume a director of football type role, but also to maybe oversee someone else coming in to do a similar job. Who knows what their plan is? It does sound remarkably sensible for more modern Manchester United, but
although randomly is like bringing an interim in to replace an interim, which is quite amusing.
Yes, the interim. However, the good news is that hasn't happened immediately before we play them. Maybe that's good news. Maybe it's not. It's typical us, probably on this occasion, it's where we did want him in the first game, and he'll have settled into a brilliant stride by the time we play them. But there we go. So that's the main bit of news. In terms of other news, Palace lost at home to Villa, which is probably the exact opposite of what they were hoping. They wanted to say, "Oh, you lost to them, and we beat them easily."
They were hoping to win, rather than
yes, yeah, probably. I think the positives from the weekend was clean sheet, another game which we haven't lost against teams that we're trying to stay above, playing pretty well. And those are the positives. And the other positive is we've gained a point on Palace and on those near the bottom as well, for what that's worth. Palace losing. I mean, in terms of other games and other stuff, Brentford got back to winning ways against Everton. Benitez now rumoured to be the favourite for the chop next amongst Premier League managers. Plenty have gone already.
He wasn't wanted in the first place by Everton, was he?
Agent Benitez, yeah. I mean, it's what, five or six managers have gone already in the Premier League. That's quite a lot. Mm. And others, I could imagine, follow as well.
Because in previous seasons, the Premier League's been the most stable league normally, where actually managers haven't gone that last few seasons. But obviously, with Watford back, that wouldn't help that situation.
Yeah, I mean, it's strange with Benitez because I thought they were excellent when they played us. Perhaps we made them look excellent, but they've been missing certain players. But they're a strange club, aren't they, Everton? I mean, they've thrown so much money at it. I think it was Koeman that wasted all that money, really, wasn't it? But
they never quite replaced Moyes, have they, after he left?
Yeah.
Yeah, how much, as you say, must have spent so much money in that time and never really, I mean, was it Richarlison alone cost like 50 or something, didn't he, I think? And Sigurdsson like 40.
Sigurdsson was 50 again.
And they're sitting...
justified that.
They're sitting in 14th place with 15 points. If Burnley had happened to have beaten Spurs rather than get their game postponed, they'd be sitting 3 points off the relegation zone. After 13 games, that's quite Newcastle-ish, isn't it, of Benitez? I'm wondering if they've got more serious problems there than they initially thought they would have.
No,
I mean, none of them were.
People are talking about this. I don't buy it. Well, what I think Everton does illustrate, which those people that booed need to kind of recognise, is how far most of the other clubs that are above Everton have gone, how much money they've spent, how they've used their position to attract the best managers, the best players, the best sporting directors, etc.
I mean, Brighton have got, below us we've got Leicester with their extra resources due to their recent successes. Their goal difference behind us when all said and done after 13 games, and Rodgers was one of the guys talked for the Man U job. You've got Aston Villa themselves, who I know have had a bad time of it recently, but they have spent inordinate amounts of money compared to, well, their initial budgets coming up into the division and staying in. And you've got, obviously, Everton themselves have thrown money in there. Those three clubs are below us in the table. We should remember that too. From Everton's point of view, worries, I doubt they'll go down, but there's got to be worries at this stage for how badly they've started.
And we're level with Man U as well. So it was only them not losing at Chelsea yesterday that kept them moved them above us again.
Yeah, the one goal better off than we are. Yeah,
the key difference with us, that, and this is the key point, is player wages. You know, our player wages is tiny compared to those sorts of clubs that we've been mentioning.
And I think Graham Potter did say, apparently someone said he was quoted post Villa somewhere, that 95% of the positions in the table are relatively proportionate to the finances. Yeah. And the 5% that isn't that is what we as a club are aiming to achieve.
He's said that on more than one occasion.
Oh, okay.
He's quite right to say it. But I think he's... because that's what Bloom's strategy is. We're not spending big on wages. And that might be the reason why we haven't managed to attract the striker.
Yeah, which is why I think you said earlier, Andy, and I agree with you, that I think we don't necessarily need the, you know, I mean, 20-goal strikers that people talk about are mythical in Premier League anyway. You know, I think you have about three or four players who will get 20 goals a season. But even a, you know, a 15-goal striker, if we could get someone with the equivalent that Mopé gets, like 10, that has a bit more height and presence in there, I think that would be what we need. Something's a bit different that can maybe come in when Mopé's not available or is not on form, or as an alternative option for teams that sit deep. And we've got a focal point then up front. I think that could be enough. I don't think we necessarily need a star striker, so to speak.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think that's true.
And their wages, hopefully, would then be more manageable for us rather than being like, you know, 80 grand a week, which is why reportedly we didn't go for Edouard, if it's true we even were in for him. You know, he's at Palace, he's at like 80, 100 grand a week, something like that, apparently.
He's not worth that much per week. Simple as that.
No.
If we were having the opportunity...
Wise, he was very affordable, but yeah, wages-wise, he's not.
If we had the opportunity to sign a player of really good quality who is worth 80 grand or 90 grand a week, and we got him on a pretty good transfer fee, either a free transfer with a relatively okay signing on fee or, you know, or relatively good transfer fee when transferring over under contract, you could understand that. You could see the justification in that, because you can say this striker makes a big difference to the overall team, just him as an individual. And you could probably argue the case for them breaking the transfer wage structure
sorry, the, yeah, the wage structure for that individual, that exception to the rule. I'm not even sure we do that, but at least that would make sense. They're not going to do that with Edward. Let's be honest. That's just ridiculous. He's that's just over demanding. But even I watched the Robbie Savage documentary this week.
We would have done it Darwin Nunes, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we probably would. We probably would, yeah. I was going to say, I watched the Robbie Savage Macclesfield documentary this week, and he said there was a player making all sorts of demands who had an agent down at the division they're in, which is ninth tier. And he turned up and he said, I want a two-year deal minimum, and I want something to do with his face being on something or other. And he wanted some loads of kind of, you know, bonus arrangements in his deal, and you think that's at tier nine. we've all got no hope, have we, if that's happening, if that's true. And no reason to say he's lying either, so yeah. But Nunes, I mean, he's probably out of our range now, unfortunately, because despite we talk about our missed our finishing being bad, somebody that wasn't Nunes missed a ultimate sitter. And they could have buried Barcelona and been in pole position going into the final Champions League games this midweek just gone. Instead, they missed it. It's now out of their hands, and they've got to now overtake Barcelona going into that final weekend. But even if they don't win that and get into the Champions League knockout stages, they, I believe, would probably, given their position, drop into the Europa League positions, which would put them into the last 32 knockout stage. There's incidentally a new system there, by the way. So the top teams don't go into the last 32. They're automatically into the last 16. And the teams that finish second go into a last 32 with all the Champions League clubs. It's a bit weird, a new arrangement. But anyway, the point is that Benfica would be playing European football on an ongoing basis from now, one way or the other. And so has Darwin Nunes, you know, have we missed the boat there? Is he now out of our range?
Well, I think
notwithstanding who's looking now.
There's talk of like Barcelona and Man City teams like that being in for him. I think we've
but even if they're not, could we actually persuade him to leave Benfica if he's getting Champions League games? We can't offer that really, can we?
Whatever
really?
Reason he went to Benfica in the first place rather than us doesn't seem to, I don't think that reason has gone. So yeah, I just don't see him ever. I think he was yet more proof that our scouts do know what they're talking about, but they didn't quite work out. And you know,
it's just trickiest conundrum, isn't it? Trying to get those deals over the line. It's infinitely trickier, not least in bloody January, which is our next opportunity.
So, I think we may well end up, although I don't necessarily agree with it, bringing back a couple of players, Zakiri maybe, maybe Mitoma, possibly.
I mean, I'd be happy. I'd actually be reasonably happy if we brought Zakiri back, if we could get Matoma's permit through and get him in January. And get him blooded in and bring in Sarmiento incrementally. You know, he's not going to start games, but if we can get him experience, you know, free reign to run out there and see what he can do and gradually build up his experience.
Yeah.
If we had those three players involved in the squad on top of what we got now, I'd probably be reasonably pleased with that.
I think we would have reasonable success. He's not played a game really for Stoke. He's been injured quite a lot of the time. So they may yet send him back. And there was talk about one of our loan players being let go. I can't remember. Oh, Andone.
I mean,
you could put an argument forward if Andone's sent back, give him a go for 6 months. Give him a, you know, he's quite physical. He's quite big. You know, give him a go up front. You know, he can't be any worse than Lacazette, frankly. So
he isn't. He's a better player, definitely, in my opinion. Yeah. Ali.
He is a better player, but rumour has it that he's not looking after himself. I might have that wrong.
In which case, the rumour may well be wrong.
There's similar rumours about
why
me.
He's not done anything he did, wouldn't it?
There's similar rumours about me. However,
are you the answer to our striking problems then, Russ?
I am actually. I've got the exact answer right here, right now. Not only have I just had a noon whistle, Burnie milk stout earlier on, which I'll show you there. But I've now found a solution to our problem because I found us a poacher, the Cranbourne poacher. it's a nice beer, actually. Rich and fruity ruby ale. There we go.
I'm a bit concerned that it might bottle it when given a chance.
Very nice. And get it in the neck from the manager. Yes. And all that sort of stuff. But, you know, anyway, as long as he's good with his head, because if you need a good header.
It's not a lager than life character, is it?
No, definitely not. He'll ale into insignificance, really, won't it, compared to others, hopefully. Right, that's enough of those puns. Any other football news? You mentioned loan players. Let's talk about the loan players.
So, talking of Mitoma, he got another goal for USG this week, although they suffered a surprise defeat at home to someone who wasn't above them in the league at home.
3-0, 3-1 home defeat, 3-1. Wasn't it?
Yeah, Mitoma got them back in it at 2-0, but then to make it 2-1, but then the other team scored. And also, but winners for two of our loan players this week. So Ryan Longman, who started to play a bit more recently for Hull, got a winner against someone or other, Birmingham maybe, something like
that. I can't remember who it was now. I think it was Birmingham, yeah. But it was a 2-1, wasn't it?
They won 2-1 and Longman got the winner. And Rida Kadra got a winner, who's another one who's quite an interesting one for the future as a kind of more attacking midfielder sort of player. He got the winner for Hull was against Millwall. Kadra got the winner for Blackburn against Stoke. Where John Paul Van Heck also came in for Blackburn, but Stoke didn't start either of their Albion loan players. Ostergaard dropped to the bench and Seymour was injured again.
Yeah, I think Longman has had COVID, but he's returned to the team, has coincided with them going on a run of wins.
Yeah, he got man the match a couple of weeks ago and was like mentioned specifically by the manager as well, which is encouraging, so... Mm-hmm.
But while we're mentioning our loanees, we may as well also mention the fact that Malumbi got sent off.
Yes, he did, didn't he? Two yellows. I saw the incident, so there's definitely no complaints to be had there, I don't think, from the player.
He was always known as being combative, wasn't he? I think he was regarded as being a combative midfielder. But there's a few others who aren't doing so well. I think there's Jenks is talking about not doing so well at Aberdeen. And, you know, there's
is doing well. Alex Cochran's doing really well.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. He's getting good reviews. Yeah.
Rushworth's getting good reviews at Walsall as well, generally. He kept another clean sheet, I think, at the weekend. I think I read somewhere.
He was on the Albion Unlimited podcast the other day.
I know that's only League Two, but then Sanchez played a season at League Two, half a season at League One, with Rochester, then came straight into the team. So, you know, who's to say that that Rushworth can't do that longer term?
Indeed. Yeah. Other news?
Walsall lost 1-0, but he had a decent game again.
I think that's it. I can't remember if the Albion ladies played this weekend. I don't think they did.
I think it's internationals at the moment, maybe.
Oh, yeah, that's right. There is, yeah, there's internationals, yeah.
It was the 19-0, was it, the Belgium beat? someone, and what was that? About three players got at least three goals each. So Armin, maybe.
I saw a fair bit of the under-23s game against Chelsea, which was
one
a good result.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a good result. Who stood out for me? Tons was really good. Spong looks good. Mark Leonard.
While we're on the under-23s, I'm not sure we mentioned this Ferguson's goal against Everton, which was
brilliant.
Yeah. So obviously, he didn't play Friday, which is why he was talking about him coming to the team permanently. But I think it was the week before they lost to Everton. But yeah. Ferguson's goal was superb.
Oh, I've not seen that, actually. I heard about it. But, yeah, I mean, obviously off the back of that and then not being in the squad, you think, oh, yeah, here we go. Yeah, maybe he's coming into it.
He was there in case someone wasn't fit or something like that. If someone was injured, he might have been the 21st player available. If, you know, if someone was a bit of a fitness doubt for the bench or something, or, you know. Or it might be that he got a knock himself.
Yeah,
I think something's gone badly wrong with Connolly, hasn't he? He's really
must be
fallen down.
Must be.
If he's behind Lacardia, genuinely, and it's not because Potter said he has been available for the last two games. So if he genuinely is below Lacardia, looking at Lacardia at the weekend, then he really is out in the wilderness. Because
and the other thing is if he's available. But there's a, say, for example, there's a personal issue that's not an attitude problem, but some kind of personal stuff going on. You wouldn't say he's available. You just say he's still unavailable, wouldn't you? So clearly he's flagging up the fact he's available and then making a point of not having him in the squad. I wouldn't say it's an out and out action to make a point, but it is making a point nonetheless, isn't it?
He mentioned in a press conference today he's had a few injuries, Connolly, but I think the last two press conferences he has said that, because presumably he was asked, I imagine, I imagine if I was a local journalist or whatever, I'd be like, well, is Lacardia really above Connolly?
I think if he's not making the cut, and that is the issue with Graham, I think you've got to get him out on loan in January.
Yeah.
Put him out. I think his profile's high enough. He should be able to get a loan at a fairly reasonable level. Put him out there. That's the test. Put him out there and see if he can respond to a different environment in a positive way rather than another negative way.
Ideally, somewhere with terrible nightlife, if we can find it.
Somewhere with terrible nightlife would be ideal.
Maybe, or someone like that.
And then, and just see how he responds to the notion of being just left out in the cold slightly, and see what he's made of. Because at the moment, you can never give up on people completely, but at the moment I kind of have, because he's just on the basis of what I'm reading between the lines in him just not figuring at all. Same with Lucardi. I mean, I know he came on the pitch, but clearly he's not fancied. He can't be fancied.
Well, we're not going to give Lucardi a new contract, are we? So
no, exactly. And we've got to stop. You know, we can't kid ourselves that they've got any real future unless there's a radical change of situation.
He's still got 2 and a bit years left in his deal and is still very young. So, I mean, if he has a loan and it does well, you never know, that might change it. But Lucardi,
that's the only hope, yeah.
I mean, Lucardi, they might try and release in January if they can manage it. But, yeah.
Yeah. He's free to talk to other clubs, of course, in January.
We're worrying about that, won't we? Yeah. Please, come and talk to him. Anyone.
There was also, somebody posted a link to there's an Instagram post where he says, I don't fit in, I never have done, never wanted to, or something like that. And there's speculation as to A, whether that's a genuine account or not. First of all, I don't know. So we have to put that in as a disclaimer. Secondly, if it is a genuine account, I'm not necessarily sure he is talking about football. He could be talking about in society, in the music industry, in his family. It could be, he might not fit in whatever. I think it's unsuitably ambiguous if it is a genuine account. Not really ideal time to put that up.
I suppose he never fitted in well with professional footballers because he wasn't one.
Oh, ouch. Right, well, hopefully
I didn't say that honestly. Yeah.
No, of course you didn't. So hopefully some people will be fitting in on the pitch to good effect on Wednesday night, 7:30 kickoff. Lucardi to start. It's a really weird midweek fixture, this, because our game was on Tuesday, got moved to Wednesday. Essentially there's 2 games on Tuesday, 6 games on Wednesday, and 2 games on Thursday, which is a bit weird. I've not come across that before for league fixtures.
Amazon Prime is the explanation.
What was that, sorry, Annie?
Amazon Prime is the explanation.
Yeah, I bet.
So I think we'll bring Duffy back this game. I'm not sure that we'll see too many other changes.
Can I be controversial and say I wouldn't start Lamptey? We've got 2 games in face of 4 days, one of which is a lot more winnable than the other one. I doubt he's going to be fit enough to start 3 games in, 8 days, effectively. So don't start him for the West Ham game where we've got less chance of winning. Keep him back for the last half hour, maybe, at West Ham. Play March from the start and then play him from the start Saturday, because I can't believe he's fit enough to start 3 games in 8 days when he hasn't played a full game for almost a year now, a full 90 minutes.
Maybe that's the plan, and that will fit in with what Andy said. Yeah, bring Duffy in, but Veltman is the right back.
He does seem to be alternating Duffy and Veltman, because I wonder if it's because they both got 4 bookings. He doesn't want them both to get booked in the same game.
Probably. We're managing it quite well. When's the amnesty, by the way? Do we know?
It's at the halfway point, I think.
Is it the actual halfway point?
Brentford. Yeah. I think it is the actual halfway point, but I could be wrong.
Mm. Yeah.
But I wonder if Lallana might come back in for the other one, possibly.
Yeah. Right, West Ham game, the actual stats, I've mentioned the head-to-head record. There's a bit of a pattern developed here. So we had 3 games in a row where we lost, 3-0 in the FA Cup, 1-0 in the Championship, followed by the return game in the Championship, of course, was that lovely 6-0 game, which everyone loves so much when we're 3-0 down after 10 minutes, amidst loads of homophobic abuse unchecked by the police right next to me, even though I pointed it out to them. Anyway...
That day was quite amused by the fact that I met a West Ham fan coming. I was having a curry on Brick Lane and we walked out and they were walking in. And he was very generous. He was like, you're a bit unlucky to lose 6-0. You didn't deserve that much. We were like, well, I think we deserved to lose about 10-0 that day. I picked a really random team that no one quite understood what was doing, that sort of thing. And if West Ham had wanted to win 10-0, they probably would have done, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, eventually we joined them in the Prem. We started off with 3 wins, a 3-0, a 3-1 and a 1-0. But we followed that up with a delightful strain of 5 successive draws. Perfect for us on a run of 6 draws in 8 games to be facing them on Wednesday. The results, by the way, if you can't remember, were 2-2, 1-1, 3-3, 2-2, 1-1. So,
and the away ones have been some quite interesting games. Well, we won 3-0 there. Then we drew 2-2, having been 2-2 in the second season. We then drew 3-3, having been 2-0 and 3-1 down. And then we drew 2-2, having gone ahead twice last season. So there's normally goals against them at Upton Park.
Yeah, our record against Newcastle, Leeds and West Ham's good. Although we've not lost, we've been disappointed with two of those. Surely now, third time lucky, we continue a run against the team we're usually good at on this occasion. Couldn't it be? Maybe. I don't think so.
We'll continue a run would be a draw at the moment, though, wouldn't it?
Well, I think it is going to be a draw. I think it will be a draw. I mean, I'm worried that we could lose this, but I do think we can draw it, and I think we will draw it.
I don't think they're the worst team for us to play, because they play quite open, and they play, you know, the one issue for me is Antonio, because when we drew their three-all, the game changed when he came off, because we played so much higher up the pitch when he came off, and we were sat back very deep to try and cover his pace in the first 70 minutes. He's such a threat.
We've done quite well against him, though, haven't we, overall? We've kept him fairly quiet when we played him.
Don't say that.
We have, but they're a different beast now. And I don't think they do play that open. I think their structure is really strong. But I think they've got... I think Rice is looking world-class at the moment. Suchek has been a very good partner. He hasn't been great this season. But I think Antonio plus those three that they play up front, they're already dangerous, exciting players, aren't they? I mean, you've been going on about all of them, haven't you? Perhaps not four nails, Russell. I'm talking, but you've
no,
said,
but he's got, good. Yeah, and he's got four goals, hasn't he?
Bowen and Benrahma. But I think four nails would be the best out of those three.
He's a good player.
I think we didn't talk about four nails because he was in Spain and we didn't really know about him before he went to West Ham. They are missing Ogbonna, which is a big blow for them.
He's out for pretty much the season, isn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's where they'll struggle, is that they haven't got the squad depth, really. But
And with Europe as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they've won their group, they're still in it.
I'm not optimistic about Wednesday.
The big surprise for me at the moment for West Ham this season is Fabianski's still number one, because I thought Areola, after his season at Fulham, would be straight in there as number one, and Fabianski will probably go or whatever at some point, but he's not barely got a look in Areola, has he?
No.
Oh, you're Flappy Hansky. Sorry, I didn't realise who you were talking about for a minute. I think they're a good team. I've got we were hoping to get representation on from West Ham. Our friend Sam from the Gladstone unfortunately wasn't available. But hello to you, Sam, if you're listening. Also, hello to my cousin, Stephen, who's a West Ham fan. and I teach someone to drive who's a West Ham fan. I had a lesson with him today, and he wasn't very impressed with the way they played against City. He's been impressed with the European campaign and obviously the overall league campaign, but he didn't think they played particularly well against Man City. He's not really sure, hasn't got any idea how this is going to go. But I know my cousin thought it might be a draw. I think what my client said today was that he thinks that we need to win the game again if we're looking to have Champions League aspirations. He, like me, thinks that there's three clearly obvious, distinct, dominant forces in this division, and the rest of it's up for grabs. And you know, all the time it's available to them, they're hoping to get in that fourth spot, and they're hoping to win. I did tell him we don't lose games very often, but we'll see what happens.
There is already a 5-point gap between third and fourth. West Ham a couple of weeks ago were mixing it, but in third, I think, weren't they? But they've lost the last couple and dropped
and the,
down.
And the title race is even tighter now, because Chelsea unexpectedly dropped points against Man United. I say unexpectedly. They've got absolutely 0 points against Man U over the last few seasons. Their stats are awful against them. But having said that, it's still a bit of a shock they didn't get the win. And of course, City and Liverpool both won. So that's even tighter up the top there. But as far as the fourth place thing goes, yeah, I mean, West Ham are in there because they look completely as credible as Arsenal and Tottenham and
I would say
Leicester and anyone else.
I would say, although they're a bit of a drift, I think United are favourites for that now that they've got Rangnick. I mean, the players they've got, they should be well, you know, up there with the top three, really. They're missing one or two positions, maybe, but they shouldn't
maybe.
Be. If you look at the depth they've got and the quality, and they look like Sancho scored yesterday and looked like a you know, the sort of player that everyone knows he is rather than the sort of player he's been so far at United.
Yeah, yeah. What, the one looking pissed off on the bench?
Also yeah. not doing very much when playing as well.
True, yeah, true. Okay, well, that pretty much wrapped it up. Any further thoughts? Andy, you've come back towards the screen here from your cooking operation. Is it, were you about to say something, or you got it all covered? We're all covered. Are you? Yeah. So who's going to the game? So I'm at the game. Are you, your game, Peter, aren't you? Andy, are you making it as well?
Yeah, yeah.
Fantastic. I know coming where we're going to be
as well.
Yes, indeed. Yes, I look forward to seeing you then on Wednesday. Our usual haunt pre-match, which has served us well on far too many occasions, actually, at the bar. So we look forward to that. 7:30 kick-off if anyone's going. And that wraps it up for this
kick-off, even if they're not going.
It is indeed. Yes, that's right. Yeah. And that's on TV, is it?
Amazon, saying. Apparently.
So that is on Amazon, right, yeah. I wasn't quite sure what was what, but okay, brilliant. Anyway, that's it for this episode then. So, Peter, stand or fall?
Up the Albion.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.